Since then, Bertha and I have lived apart. She is mistress of half our wealth and lives in a neighborhood quite far away. I traveled to Europe with Charles, whence we parted company. He to the courts of princes, myself to wander those beloved Alps. Now I have come home to die. I am told Bertha lives pitied and admired. I hear they are bemused at what I should have against such a charming woman. Now I know why Lucrezia Borgia came to life in my presence, and that I was in love with a woman in her likeness. And now, on the 20th of September, 1850, I look down at these words as if they are old friends. I have seen them in my mind's eye a thousand times, and beheld this, the scene of my dying struggle.
Perry! Perry, help me! Quickly, Perry!
Latimer!
Where's Perry?
Oh, he's gone after Mrs. Perry, sir.
Fetch him!
I don't know where they've gone, sir. There was a terrible row with her being ill. She ran off swearing to kill herself. He went after her.
Oh, hell. You'll have to find my pills. Look in the desk.
Is it these ones, sir?
Yes. Quickly now. Bring them here. After all, I don't want to die. You see, I'm not ready. No one is ever ready. Oh, hold my hand. Please.
Oh, sir. Oh, hadn't I better run for the doctor?
No. I don't want to die on my own. You've got to stay, please.
You're not going to die, sir.
Yes, I am. I have known the date and the time of my death for as long as I can remember. I have died in a dream countless times. I'm sorry you were chosen to be with me. It's horrible for you. Don't let it spoil your life. I even know that as the life drains out of me, the last thing I will see is the small caster on the leg of the card table.
Oh, Mr. Latimer.
The Lifted Veil by Jonathan Holloway, adapted in two parts from the novella by George Eliot. Part 1.
Dr. Black, what would you think if I told you I know the exact date and time of my death?
No, Latimer, I'm not entering into any of your games. I had enough of all that superstitious guff in the service. No, this is a serious matter, I'm afraid. I'm sorry, but there's no doubt about it. Angina. Classic symptoms, you see.
Thank you, Dr. Black. Angina, you say? Maybe. Maybe. Anyway, it's not a surprise. I have never been what you call robust.
But a shame, nevertheless. After all, you have never overindulged. There is not 1 ounce of fat on your body, and only 31 years of age. By rights, you should live until you're 100 years old.
How long do you believe I will live?
Well, angina is unpredictable. If you take care, you could live another 30 years. Eat properly, keep an eye out for reports of disease in town. Stay in the country when typhus or influenza are about. Don't ride. In fact, avoid any tiring journeys. Just a little exercise and fresh air when the weather is kind.
And what is the worst thing that could happen?
Well, you could go tomorrow.
I do actually know the exact date and time of my death.
Now, don't start all that up again. You sound as if you're losing sight of reality and sinking into a melancholic miasma. Or you have someone you want to benefit by inheritance and you feel obliged to get on with it.
Well, as I'm alone in the world, the beneficiary idea does not hold water, does it?
But what about your... No? All right, then.
And do I seem like a fellow in a melancholy decline?
Well, hard to tell. Some people are very good at covering things up.
Really, Doctor, do I act like a lunatic?
A depression is not lunacy, Latimer.
What do you know of clairvoyance, Doctor?
I think that now we might well be speaking of lunacy after all.
I will die of a heart attack on the 20th of September in this year of 1850.
What do you expect me to say?
It is a simple fact.
Oh, look here, Latimer. Inaction is torture to a busy mind and spirit. It can lead to obsession, that sort of thing. I feel you should undertake some worthwhile enterprise. You need a purpose which will bring you out of yourself.
Well done, Doctor. I wondered how I was going to get started, what would prompt me to get on with it. It's you, and it's here and now. Excellent.
We'll start what?
A memoir.
Just the thing. A worthwhile enterprise.
And inevitable. That is the queer thing, you see. When you know something is going to happen, it makes you into a sort of spectator, waiting, listening for the catches to click, for the links to shuffle into place. On the 20th of September, I suddenly grip my breast and slide out of my chair. As I go over, I smudge the ink of the last line in my journal. It reads, "This, the scene of my dying struggle." Squiggle, squiggle. Oh, and you will be surprised to learn, what is the last thing I see before darkness overtakes me? Nothing grand. Not that statue of the Sacred Heart, nor the bust of Leonardo, no. It will be the little brass wheel on the leg of the card table.
Oh, whatever you say, Latimer. You've a mordant mind and a damn depressing sense of humour. I will return at 11 o'clock tomorrow. Will you be up and dressed?
Oh, yes, Dr. Black. Now I have a mission. I will be up with a cockerel. Perry?
Yes, sir.
Show the doctor out, Perry. Then I would like you to send to town. I need a big fat notebook, sturdily bound, so it will survive much thumbing. Lots of pages, and a big box of quills, and a new packet of ink.
Sir.
Got to get started, eh, Doctor?
What is death? The eye will cease to entreat. The ear will be deaf. The brain will no longer want or work. Surely, like a gracious performer at the opera, we should retire behind the curtain with a bow and hand on heart. But no, we have to be dragged behind the curtain, filled with dread. We kick and scream and struggle against death. We are at our worst as the veil descends. Now to it. My childhood perhaps seems happier to me than it really was, by contrast with the darkness of the after years. The curtain of fortune was as impenetrable to me as it was to other children.
Latimer, there you are. How did you manage the stairs on your own?
Oh, Latimer, what's the matter?
The soldiers. The noise of their boots, Mama. Why is it so loud?
Oh, there, there. Shh. Would you like to sit on my lap?
Yes, please.
There. That's better.
Dorothy! How are you this evening, my dear?
Frederick, we weren't expecting to see you until much later.
Well, I was bored and I missed you both. And what on earth is the point of inheriting a bank, albeit of modest proportions, if one cannot choose to slip away from time to time? Now then, Latimer, how are you feeling? How is the boy, Dorothy? Latimer, you've been crying.
He says the noise of the soldiers upsets him. Perhaps we should move back to Hampshire, at least until he recovers.
Now, Latimer, what's all this? You're a very silly boy to be frightened of the soldiers. Surely you'd like to grow up straight and fearless like those boys in the guards, wouldn't you?
Oh, Freddy, please, don't tell him off.
I wasn't telling him off.
He can't see. And that means all his busy little imagination is focused on the sounds around and about him.
And what does the doctor say about his eyes? Any progress there?
No. But Dr. White remains convinced it is a temporary condition. His sight will return. Soon, Latimer. Soon.
Of course, it's all difficult. I understand that. But really, it's not the way, is it? Whenever I come home, there he is, cosseted on your knee. You'll make him too soft for the world, Dorothy.
Be kind, Frederick. It hurts my heart to see him sitting in here by himself. It's horrible to watch the way he bumps about like an old blind dog, trying to find me. That's why he sits on my knee.
Well, as you know, I am trying very much to do the right thing. I appreciate your views on bringing the boy up a certain way, and I am trying.
I know, Frederick, and I am grateful.
For heaven's sake, there are things I could have done at the bank. But no, I came home.
Shall I set the tea in here, madam?
Yes. Dorothy, you say.
Yes. Serve it in here.
Very well. I think perhaps you are right about the town. For all we know, this blindness may be down to some city infection.
After all, it is a while since we were in the country.
Yes, it's time I took a look over the estate.
Yes, I think that sounds very sensible. We could leave next Friday. Alfred will need to be brought home for Easter. I hope he will accept me more as he grows up.
Latimer can come to the bank with me that day. He can play downstairs. We will leave after luncheon, retrieve Alfred from Eton, thank you, and with good luck, we'll be at the house in time for a late supper.
Thank you, Frederick.
As I said, Dorothy, I am trying to do the right thing.
Alfred, how lovely.
Mother, how are you?
Doesn't he look fine, Dorothy? I'll swear he's grown up 3 inches since Christmas.
Alfred, you look wonderful. Quite the gentleman. And thank you for that generous way you refer to me as mother.
About time, eh, young man? Go on now and show your mother what you brought her.
Show me what? Where's Latimer?
Go on, Alfred, show her.
Where on earth have you two put Latimer?
There you are, Father. What is the point when she's only interested in Latimer?
Oh, no, Alfred, that is not fair. Of course, I'm interested in the both of you. What have you brought?
House ribbons for Greek and Latin.
Oh, well done, Alfred. Well done indeed. Now then, where's that boy?
Oh, he's in the coach. Don't fret, Dorothy. I'll fetch him.
I would rather have run or sailed or ridden or practically anything. But Father said I should make my mark in classics. He said a whole man needs an intellectual grounding. That's you talking, not him. He wanted me to get these to please you, to get in with you, and you're not interested. Where's Latimer?
The boy can't see. If you leave him in the coach, all he can do is sit and wait to be fetched. Now, be fair, Alfred. I am very pleased about the ribbons, really.
Here's the boy. Come along, Latimer. Your mother's over here.
Mother, where are you?
Oh, here, Latimer. How did you like being at the bank? Oh, dear, your cheeks are frozen.
It's Saturday tomorrow, Alfred. No duties I can think of. Why don't we all ride?
Good idea, sir.
As a family, we could put Latimer on a leading rein.
Riding? Good. The flowers are just coming up. I'm sure it will be very pretty. But Latimer doesn't have to come.
Mama?
Oh, you can help cook. You hold her apron, and she'll keep you safe.
Don't look so fretful, Latimer. We'll be back in time for dinner.
Goodbye, Latimer. You stay close to cook, and I'm sure you'll have a good deal of fun.
We'll be all right together, won't we, Master Latimer? Now, wave to your mother. Here, like this. She's over to your right. No, a little bit further over.
Walk on.
Goodbye, Latimer.
What would you like to make today, Master Latimer?
Gingerbread. Could we make that, do you think?
That's a fine idea. Ooh, hot in here after being outside. Still a wintry chill in the air. We'll walk you over and sit you on the bench by the grate. Here. That's right. Now, turn about and sit down. There. Now, you better be careful of the flagstones in here, Master Latimer. All higgledy-piggledy. You don't want to trip over now. I'm used to it. Pick up my feet like a prancing pony, I do.
Cook? What's your best thing to make?
Are we talking about for eating or for the pleasure of doing?
Either way.
Oh, now, don't disturb that fire, Master Latimer. I've got it laid in with a good heat. You poke it about and it'll get all loose. And a loosened fire cools down fast. Come over here now. Do you need me to come and get you?
No, I can do it. I can smell you.
Oh, dear. That's not a very gentlemanly remark.
It's a nice smell. Uncooked cake mix.
Oh, heaven. Are you hurt?
I bumped my head, I think.
Oh, there's some blood there. You've had a proper knock on that hard floor.
Cook, I can see you. Oh. I can see you, really.
Oh, my. Well, it's some sort of little miracle. Oh, bless me. Are you sure? What colour have I got on?
A red apron.
Yes.
And a big red face on top of it.
Oh, hooray, Master Latimer. Hooray. Mr. Perry?
Cook? Yes, what's the matter?
It's Master Latimer here. He's just fallen over, busted his head, and blown me if he can't see again.
Oh, that's rare, Master Latimer. I'm well pleased. I think perhaps we should fetch the doctor.
How long until his mother and father are back home?
No more than an hour.
We send now, and the doctor will be here the same time as the family. Oh, that'll be a good thing.
Hey, look out. That's strange. Here they come now. Well, looks like it'll rain. Perhaps they didn't fancy staying out after all.
Perry! Call the doctor right away. Take Alfred's rein and sort him out. I'm going back to Dorothy. Tell the doctor to meet me over at the Browns' house. Dorothy is with them.
Sir, what's happened,
sir? Is the mistress all right, sir?
Look after Latimer. No, the mistress isn't all right. Give Alfred a brandy to settle his nerves. Latimer, I'll be back very soon.
Father.
I'm so sorry, Latimer.
The boy can see you, sir.
What?
He can see your face.
See? How? I haven't got time. I've got to get back.
Now we're both in the same boat, Latimer. I'm sorry for you. Really, I am. She was a kind woman.
Come inside, Master Latimer.
No, leave me here, please. Let me stand here.
It's been threatening to rain all day. Looks like settling in.
So there I was, waiting for her. I had been blind for 6 weeks, and now I could see. I could see Father's big, middle-aged face, made absurdly broad by whiskers sweeping outward. Alfred, hardly recognizable. He'd become a man since Christmas, a Spartan shoulders and a thick, fine grey down across his cheeks. But my mother was gone, and I had been cheated of her face. You don't remember the most familiar things as well as you think you will, unless you know you're going to have to. All those hours on her lap, my face next to hers, cooing over each other. Her smell. That stays with me till this day.
Ah, Latimer, come in, come in. This is Mr. Letherall. Say hello, Latimer.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Latimer. How are you?
I'm well, sir. How are you?
Well, thank you. Frederick, just one glance at the boy and it's quite clear my suspicions have some truth in them, I'm afraid. Come here, young man.
Go on, Latimer.
Now, I'm going to put my hands on your head, Latimer. I'm going to feel the rises and hollows of your skull. Mind you, it would be easier without all this flip-flop long hair business. Somewhat feminine, don't you think, Frederick?
Yes, sorry, his mother.
Don't wince, Latimer. And don't pull away. It won't hurt you at all. I just need to... Yes, here and here. Come over here, Frederick. Look. See the way the surface of the skull dips. There is a deficiency here and here. And over here, there is excess. This arch is a vacuum, which will be full of strange ideas, which will cause trouble if it isn't drained
and laid to rest.
What's to be done?
No point in sending him to school. Schools assume all things are equal, that boys are pretty much balanced creatures. That's not the case here. He needs private tutors who will concentrate on specific areas not natural to a brain like that. Look at his face and the way he stands. There's too much of the child's mother about him. He needs natural history, science, facts, and grounded stuff. No airiness. An improved man is a man who knows why water runs downhill, Latimer. Remember that. And don't listen to the fuzzy-headed romantics.
Yes, sir.
Frederick, I say the best thing is to send him away to a place where they think straight. The moment he's old enough to travel, you should get him away from bad influences. English schools, Latin, literature, classics. It's all just posturing. Switzerland. Never been there myself, but they know their stuff.
So I did all that. Natural history and science. But I read other things too, in secret. Plutarch and Shakespeare and Don Quixote on the sly. And then, in an effort to cut me off from art, I was packed off to the most romantic place I could imagine.
Hi there! Or should it be ahoy?
Good day would probably suffice.
Ah, so you are an Englishman after all. Look, my dear fellow, I wanted to hire a boat this afternoon, but this is the last one, and you have taken possession of it.
So I have.
Geneva is such a damnably tedious place in the afternoons. Yeah, well, any time, actually. What's to be done, do you think?
I don't know.
I've seen you about. Us English fellows have got to stick together. Would you consent to share?
Actually, I'd rather not. Oh. I like to take her out by myself, and that's the point of the exercise.
We'd shared the cost. And I reckon I'm a better rower than you.
I was going to sail.
Whatever. Oh, come on. I only get one afternoon free in every fortnight. I always get a boat. Please.
Oh, all right. Don't chatter all the way. Oh.
Just as you say, old fellow. My name is Charles. What's yours?
Latimer, how do you do?
Not too well, actually.
I think we can put the sail up now.
Yes, very good. Yeah, you stay there. I'll do it. Oop.
We need to bring her head to wind, otherwise you'll never get it hoisted properly. Ah.
That should do it. Ah, we appear to be drifting sideways.
You haven't dropped the centerboard.
Yes.
I thought you said you took a boat out every fortnight.
First time, actually. But that doesn't mean I hadn't set my heart on it. So, how did you manage to wash up in Switzerland? A touch young, I would have said.
I'm 17 years old. Been here nearly 2 years. I was taught at home, and then my father decided some more structured finishing off is required. There was this horrible phrenologist chap called Leatherall, Mr. Bunce. My father takes altogether too much notice of him. You wouldn't credit how much firmer he used to be. Yes, and Mr. Bunce suggested Edinburgh or Geneva. So it was drizzle and slums or mountains and lakes. Not a difficult choice, really. Well, what about you?
Charles Mounier, born near Richmond.
Oh, I have an aunt in Petersham.
Richmond, Yorkshire.
Oh.
21. An orphan raised by an aunt in Hove. Educated at a rather frightening school just near Peckham Rye, then sent here to continue my studies in medicine. Scraping through on the damned pittance, which is all my aunt can manage. Ah, but I'm sure it will all seem worthwhile when I am famous, and make no mistake about it, Latimer. Famous is what I fully intend to be. Good heavens, look how far we've come. I thought we were hardly moving. Where are we going?
Where would you have gone if you'd had the boat yourself?
I wouldn't have gone anywhere. I saw you climbing in and decided to catch a ride.
What an odd sort.
Well, that's rich. You're a pale, sickly, odd sock yourself. So where are we going?
As far out into the middle as possible. Then we can let the sail down and drift for an hour or so.
Is that what you usually do?
Yes.
Sounds like a very good way of getting into some kind of bother.
Oh, not really. One has to keep an eye on the gap between those two peaks. That's where the bad weather blows in from at this time of year. nature in all her awful loveliness.
Hmm. Lonely out here?
Not at all. I have my least solitary moments in the middle of the water, in the evening, when it seems as if the sky, the glowing mountaintops, the wide blue water surround me and cherish me. And I can smell my mother's perfume.
And you don't find all this, well, frightening?
No. I'm considered weak and an enemy to myself. I'm always under surveillance. My father has hired people to keep an eye on me. Someone will be watching us from the shore. If you look over there, you can see two fellows lolling by a jolly boat. If it looks as though we're in danger, that boat will be launched in a trice.
I can't see them. Where?
By the flag.
Heavens, your eyesight must be extraordinary.
Mm. Eyes, ears, taste. I'm good at all those things. Hear that bell?
No.
Because you're not listening. Sit still and try.
Ah, yes. There it is. You've got a gift there, Latimer.
I was blind for a while, a long time ago. I suppose I just got used to seeing and hearing in a way which passes most people by. Are you good at what you do? I never could get on with science.
Put me at table and I am all gawk and I don't get invited back. But put me to dismembering a cadaver and I am a magician. You see, Latimer, it's not the Antarctic nor the Amazon. They are not the real frontiers. Death. That is the limit of civilization. He draws the line across the map. We must push him back. An articulate, complex, admirable being is made leaden in a second. Where has that spark of life gone? Nowhere. Well, at least not right away. Until decay sets in, the body is a machine which has ruptured and leaked the pressure of life. That's my enterprise. To save humanity.
You set yourself up against God.
This is a new world, Latimer. Man has no need of God. He is become a God. The things I believe are simple, logical, and indeed holy. Can we head back now?
Charles was poor and ugly, derided by the young ladies of Geneva, not accepted in drawing rooms. Comradeship sprung up between us. And in Charles's rare holidays, we travelled together. While I listened dreamily, he unfolded his brave conceptions of future experiment and discovery. I mingled them with glimpses of blue water and delicate floating cloud. This happier life at Geneva was put to an end by a severe illness, which is partly a blank to me, partly a time of dimly remembered suffering. With the presence of my father by my bed, from time to time.
When you are quite well enough to travel, Latimer, I shall take you home with me.
Would you ask Charles to visit this afternoon? I'm terribly bored by this languid and monotonous convalescence.
I sent to him yesterday, but the fellow seems to have vanished, gone back to England, I believe. He left you a note.
I'm sorry to give the appearance of desertion, old friend.
My aunt has been ill these 2 weeks, and I had not known until now. I must return home, hoping you will forgive this sudden departure, and trusting our paths will cross in time. Please, if ever the phrase had meaning, then get well soon. Charles.
Huh. That's it, then. Poor old Charles.
I thought, Latimer, we might not travel by the most direct route. Perhaps we may make something of an adventure by going through the Tyrol and Austria. And in this way, we both shall see many new places. Our neighbours, the Fillmores, have arrived and consent to accompany us. What's more, Alfred will join us at Basel. In this way, we may all visit Vienna together and journey home via Prague. I'm very fond of Prague. And feel certain you will enjoy it, too.
That sounds very fine, Father.
That's what your mother would have said. And, now you must rest. It's a fine day, and if I open the window, you'll gain the full benefit of the sunshine and the fresh air. Remember how frightened you were of the sounds from the street?
Yes, Father. And now I enjoy their variety.
Time for you to rest. Will you get up for dinner?
Yes, Father.
Good afternoon, then.
My mind rested on the word Prague, and my bedroom and the sounds of the street melted away as I was overtaken by a wondrous scene. Broad summer sunshine illuminated a dusty city, a weary city, unrefreshed by dew or rain. A place of time-eaten grandeur, occupied by a people living on the stale repetition of memories, like tattered, deposed kings. The city's river was a sheet of heated metal, its unending bridge occupied by numerous blackened, saintly statues who seemed the real inhabitants of this place. The image was vivid and filled with extraordinary detail of hills, boulevards, churches, and palaces. I moved through the vision, taking in its sights. Eventually, the dream selected a single image for my concentration. A lamp in the shape of a star hung above me in the hot dream breeze. The brazier sun transmitted its rays through the lamp to make a patch of rainbow light upon the pavement.
Latimer, are you awake?
Never more so in my life.
I'm sorry to disturb you. Mrs. Fillmore has arrived, and you should pay your respects.
How long were you gone?
A matter of moments, sir. I met Mrs. Fillmore at the bottom of the stairs.
Prague. Tell me about Prague.
What? Why so excited, Latimer?
I'll tell you then. Remember, Father, that I have never seen any image of that city, never heard it described, nor even considered a visit there. It is an old city, remodeled on the conceit of princes. Its primary architecture is in the Baroque style. There are hills, one of which bears a single long and substantial palace. There is a wide river through its midst, traversed by a bridge, along either side of which is an array of saintly statues. It is dry, and the air is thick with the dust of age and neglect.
You have the likeness of it unusually well. You must have seen or read something. Now, I will leave you after all. Rest, and Mrs. Fillmore can see you tomorrow.
I could not believe that I had been asleep. I had not fallen into slumber, no. The vision had broken in upon me. Perhaps this was the true muse. The vision of Homer, Dante, Milton. Just as a bump on the head had given me back my sight, so my illness had carried off some obstruction, and the life of a poet lay ahead. The hours dragged on. Each moment a torment as I waited for the recurrence of my new gift, for something to reawaken the vibration of my slumbering genius. Then, the following day...
Father, is there something wrong? Why are you here again? Father, why don't you speak?
He was in the room, but not alone. There were two persons with him.
I did not see the door open, Father. Oh, Mrs. Fillmore, how do you do?
I remembered our neighbor very well, although I had not seen her for 5 years. She was commonplace, middle-aged, pink-faced, in silk and cashmere. There was a third figure, a young woman no more than 20 years old. Tall, slim, willowy, with luxuriant blonde hair arranged in a queer way, which made it seem too massy and out of proportion to the small-featured, thin-lipped face below. No one spoke. The trio seemed as if fixed in the air, staring directly at me.
Forgive me, Father, but is there something wrong?
And yet they smiled. My father grinned. I felt a painful sensation, as if a sharp wind were cutting me. That young woman, both attractive and terrifying, like peering into a ravine from off a narrow pathway. The pale green dress with its border of green leaves, which mingled with her blonde hair, made me think of German tales. Water imps. She seemed the dangerous daughter of some cold stream.
Well, Latimer?
His voice travelled up to me as if from the bottom of some deep stairway.
Well, Latimer, you thought me long.
And the group just vanished. Gone in an instant. The room empty.
Empty. Am I ill? Is this the power? Or is it some brain disease? Some intermittent delirium?
Monsieur, ne se trouve pas bien?
I'm tired of waiting, Pierre. I'm afraid something has happened to my father. He is usually very punctual. Run to the Hotel des Bergues and see if he is there.
Bien, monsieur.
Already I had begun to taste something of the horror that belongs to the lot of a human being whose nature is not adjusted to simple human conditions.
Well, Latimer, you thought me long.
Father, I...
I've been telling the ladies how much better you are, Latimer. They're waiting in the next room. You appear less fit than I had hoped. We shall put off our shopping expedition today.
No, Father, really, I'm perfectly well.
Are you sure you're up to it?
Yes, perfectly well now. I recognize Mrs. Fillmore, but who is the young lady?
I fail to understand, Latimer. You can't have seen either of them yet, for neither has entered the room.
I was at the window earlier. I saw you arrive.
And you recognized us from above. Keen eyes, Latimer, very keen. That young lady is Bertha Grant, Mrs. Fillmore's orphan niece. Fillmore has adopted her, and she lives with them. So you will have her for a neighbor when we go home, perhaps even for a near relation. For there is a tenderness between her and Alfred. I should be glad of the match, since Fillmore means to provide for her as if she were his daughter. It had not occurred to me that you knew nothing about her.
Shortly after the premonition of my father, Mrs. Fillmore and Bertha Grant, my powers increased with great rapidity. To second sight was added the gift curse of mind-reading. Whoever I turned my gaze upon, however uninteresting an acquaintance, Mrs. Fillmore, for example, that individual's vagrant, frivolous ideas and emotions would force themselves into my consciousness, like a badly played pianoforte, or an insect caught behind the curtains. But at least early on, the gift was fitful.
So, Latimer, what do you think about Mrs. Fillmore's ideas concerning next Christmas, eh?
I'm not sure I entirely followed what was said.
Really, Latimer, you do seem abstracted these days. For all your weak-kneed girlishness, you at least had a quick mind, and things did not need to be said twice.
I was saying to your father that as we are neighbours, and as yours is a household all of men, then it might be well for us to celebrate the holidays altogether.
Yeah.
And your father is a handsome man. And while I know he is not attracted to me, in his cups he might be encouraged to press a kiss upon these lips, or at least respond favorably if I did the same to him. Oh, it would be nice to taste his warm saliva, all tobacco and whiskey flavors, like thick Madeira.
It sounds a thoroughly good idea. It would take some burden from off Perry.
He's a loyal fellow, Perry, but things have become difficult now his wife is in and out the asylum. Didn't mind his slothful ways as long as that wife was about, bending over fireplaces, her apron pulled in at the waist very nicely, and then the skirts bellowed out in a way that gave good shape to her round behind. Yes, well worth having about, but no use now. There's precious little to recommend the fellow now.
And yet, when I turned my gaze upon Bertha, all was silence at first.
Are you trying to look behind my eyes?
What?
Or underneath my dress? You would like me to lift the skirt, would you not?
and part my legs for you to peer at the orchid in its hidden place.
Had she spoken? Or were these thoughts she intended me to receive?
What?
I did not say anything, Latimer.
What was that, Latimer?
I thought Miss Grant spoke a few words.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said nothing on the subject of Christmas. But, of course, my aunt's suggestion seems to make excellent sense of the situation.
My God, Latimer, you really are the oddest-looking fellow. Quite the image of those pale girls who are all the rage in naughty paintings at the moment.
It's nice to see you too, Alfred. You're exactly what I expected.
Am I? Am I now? Well, that's probably a good thing, isn't it? Not too fond of surprises myself.
You've grown into a confident, handsome man.
That's kind of you, Latimer. I say, I didn't mean to offend you. But if a chap can't speak out honestly to his brother, well, where are we, eh?
Quite so, Alfred. In fact, you weren't so very far from the truth. My looks, such as they are, have attracted several invitations to sit for painters working on themes from antiquity. Narcissus, Ophelia, that sort of thing.
But Ophelia's a girl. You weren't taken for a girl, surely?
No, it wasn't that I was taken for a girl. It was a particular effect the painter was trying for.
Well, never mind. I'm sure we'll get some meat on those bones one day. Maybe it's time I was more of a brother. Took up your cause and all, eh? Oh, here they come. Get yourself together, Latimer. Come on, straighten up.
Alfred, I didn't realize you were already here. I expected you at 3, so we went for a stroll. Basel really is a very beautiful city. Better than I thought.
Alfred, you look absolutely the part, young man. Shows up these German chaps what they are. Doesn't he cut a dash, my dear? What do you say, Bertha?
It's very good to see you, Alfred. I speak for all of us when I say we missed your sunny good humour.
Sunny good humour. Very good. Very good indeed.
Well, as we're all here, I hope we may depart for the carriages and our sightseeing. No doubt the youngsters would like to go together while we old folks occupy the second carriage.
And so we departed for the tourist round. Alfred and Bertha sat facing forward, I with my back to the horses. We chattered gaily enough, but in the lapses, I noticed Bertha staring at me and not at the sights observed in my brother's commentary. Then she adjusted her skirt and with a slow, deliberate motion drew the hem above her ankle, indicating that she would like to continue drawing it upward. It was the most obvious and disconcerting coquetry one could imagine, quite frightening in its openness and aggression. Within a few days, our party continued its queer and increasingly rank progress. Vienna offered marvelous vistas, and I sought excuses not to venture from Bertha's side.
Nonsense. How is it to be measured? Worth resides in how much use a person is, and property runs alongside, as a consequence of it. If 7 Dars were to burn today, immolating all its residents, England would not be affected one jot. If Eton were to burn, the imperial game would be put back by 100 years.
I can see it, Latimer. There's reality in it, wouldn't you say?
I don't like to contradict you, Bertha.
Because you can't, Latimer. You're full of poetry, but it's only a guise, my dear. You and your fellow romantics like to lose yourselves in poetry and silly pictures that don't look like anything. All the time your head is pointed at some ugly artifact, actually, you're studying the rest of us out of the corner of your eye to see how bewildered we are and how impressed we are with your insight.
Bravo, Bertha. It's what I always thought, but couldn't muster the argument.
So, medicine for all, regardless of worth.
Property?
Property. The poor breed still. Their poverty is no inhibitant. Their numbers are kept up by God's device of breeding. This is his medicine. Their continuing abundance preserves the race of the labouring man against culling by disease, war, etc. He has given the means. We do not need to bend our efforts to improve on his design.
We raise ourselves by our efforts to relieve the condition of others.
So, it's a selfish indulgence after all.
Bravo, Bertha! You've got him, damn it! Heavens, Bertha, you really are exquisite. Isn't she exquisite, Latimer?
Yes, she is. Very.
Come sit by the window, Bertha.
Time enough for staring at me from close quarters, Alfred. No. For the limited days remaining between we three, I would rather remain tied alongside your beautiful, ladylike brother.
Ladylike? Straight to the heart, eh, Latimer?
Yes.
It's time Latimer and I took ourselves off. Things to do in secret, Bertha? Secret birthday things?
Oh, good. But I shan't think about my birthday at all yet. That way I won't be disappointed when everyone forgets. Latimer, will you ask me to dance?
I would like to very much, but I expect the request will be turned down.
I assure you it will not.
But you scorn to wear my birthday present to you.
I am not wearing mine, but that has nothing whatsoever to do with scorn.
I'm afraid it is not as expensive as the others you have been given. It's an opal. For me, it reflects both the changing light of heaven and of a woman's eyes. I am sorry the poverty of my gift disappointed you. I should have remembered that you despised poetic natures and should have given you coral or turquoise or some other opaque, unresponsive stone.
You are becoming too animated. Even Alfred will notice. Calm down. Do I despise it? Oh, see this chain around my neck. Notice it is weighted and disappears beneath the décolleté. As I pull it out, you will see a small opal ring hanging from that chain. And if you were to feel it, you would know the metal is warmed from my breast. Oh, it scratches me and is not comfortable where it is, in that secret place. Since your poetical nature is so stupid as to prefer a more public position, I shall not endure the pain any longer. I will wear the ring on my finger instead. Oh dear, it only fits here, the third finger of the left hand. Well now,
I was completely disarmed by this, and for 2 days shut myself up in my room whenever Bertha was absent, that I might squirm on my bed, intoxicating myself afresh with a memory of that ring nestling between her breasts.
Monsieur, here, let me offer you something special for the ladies, monsieur.
No, thank you, no time.
Don't stand there pretending to look busy, young man. You don't have anything special to do, unless it means running back to your hotel to count your money and think up more things to occupy your shallow, useless, self-satisfied little Englishness.
What? Damn it, who do you think you're talking to?
Monsieur, I said nothing. You don't want to buy. That's your choice, monsieur.
Really, I won't have this.
Little shit.
Who said that?
That's it. Tonight, when she's asleep, that is when I will leave. Forever.
Quiet, damn you! Shut up! It was not only men's interiors which swarmed about my head. The sounds of the real world were likewise increased in volume. But Bertha remained utterly mysterious. Her mind was silence when she chose. The noise of the world lessened in her presence. She seemed content with her approaching, seemingly inevitable marriage to Alfred. Yet hidden from all but ourselves, she carried on the most extreme flirtation, which kept me excited both day and night. In the daytime, our real-life encounters brought tantalizing looks and even nudges, body to body. In darkness, the imagined Bertha stole into my head, and her succubus presence kept me half ecstatic through the night.
Won't you come along now, Latimer? It is very close, and I think we've seen enough of the Beaux-Arts for today. And we must meet your father and your brother quite soon.
Forgive me, Mrs. Fillmore. This gallery is, for me, a most important feature of Vienna. I have looked forward to it. I would enjoy another hour or so.
In that case, we'll walk out beyond the terrace to that charming coffee room by the bridge. We can sit for a while.
Then you may join us when you feel ready, Latimer, when you can take your leave of Lucrezio Borgia.
Giorgione's portrait of the cruel-eyed Lucrezia Borgia. Standing before her, I began to feel faint, overcome with the strange smells of unfamiliar perfumes and the sense of a bygone age of malodorous feeding and soiled bodies.
As a child, I had stared long at the sun and watched it come to life as a bright spinning ball surrounded by swirling colors. Lucrezia's portrait took on that aspect as a vivid image tumbling out of a shimmering background. I am convinced I came closer to the woman in that instant than anyone since her death. I fled from the chamber, waited at the terrace entrance until my mind cleared.
There you are.
We thought you'd given us the slip. I was sent to trap you. Well, it shan't happen again. There. Now we're locked arm in arm and you can't run off.
And should you want Alfred to see us so?
The prospective bride arm in arm with her harmless future brother-in-law. Why should that cause a moment's anxiety? Latimer, what's the matter with you?
The gardens, the summer sky, the consciousness of Bertha's arm being within mine, all vanished. And I seemed to be suddenly in darkness, out of which there gradually broke a dim firelight, and I felt myself sitting in my father's leather chair in the library at home. There I was, transferred, and there welled up inside me an intense and hopeless misery. Bertha entered the picture as she advanced upon me with a candle raised beside her face. Her wedding ring shone, and in the instant, I knew her to be my wife. She wore the green wood spirit dress in which I had first seen her, and beheld me with cruel eyes. I was able to read her mind again, but flirtation was long gone.
You madman.
You idiot! Why don't you hurry up and kill yourself?
I despise this woman with a barren soul and mean thoughts. I felt helpless before her, as if she clutched my bleeding heart and would clutch it until the last drop of lifeblood ebbed away. She was my wife, and we hated each other. Then the hearth, the dim library, the candlelight disappeared, leaving the green serpent diamond eyes burned on my retina.
Are you right, Latimer?
How long was I unconscious?
I don't think you can have been unconscious at all, Latimer. You just drifted off for a few moments.
Do you love me, Bertha?
Oh, good heavens, Latimer. Are you possessed?
It doesn't matter to me what we may become. That's all in the future, and the devil can take it. I'm not frightened because it will be worth it if I know I can have you.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to marry your brother.
The fear of poison is feeble against the dreadful thirst. I detest my brother's cack-handed pursuit of you. It is the old story. Men sell themselves to the tempter and sign a bond with their blood, because it is only to take effect at a distant day, then rush to snatch the cup, knowing that dark shadow will be beside them forevermore.
Have you seen something, Latimer? Latimer, what have you seen?
Bertha, how can you love Alfred?
Why do you suppose I love him?
How can you ask that, Bertha?
What? Your wisdom thinks I must love the man I'm going to marry. The most unpleasant thing in the world. I should quarrel with him. I should be jealous of him. Our menage should be conducted in a very ill-bred manner. A little quiet contempt contributes greatly to the elegance of life.
Bertha, that is not your real feeling. Why do you delight in trying to deceive me by inventing such cynical speeches?
The easiest way to deceive a poet is to tell him the truth. You see something in me, don't you? Something others cannot see. Are you really beginning to discern what a heartless girl I am?
Our next stop was the dreaded Prague. Would it be exactly as my clairvoyance conjured it? If the city were true to its mind picture, then my premonition of a cursed union with Bertha must also become real. Yes, it was as I had seen it. I searched for the final telltale, a small fragment of the image in my mind. If it was present, then there could be no doubting what the fates held in store. And again, there it was. The patch of rainbow light on the pavement transmitted through the lamp in the shape of a star. Returned to England before the autumn was ended, my brother and Bertha were engaged to each other. I longed for an assurance of love from Bertha's lips, but I dared not ask again.
Latimer, old boy, what a pity it is you don't have a run with the hounds now and then. It's the finest thing in the world for low spirits.
Low spirits. That is the sort of phrase with which coarse, narrow natures such as yours think to describe experience of which you can know no more than your horse knows.
What?
Oh, I was quoting from the story I am reading.
So, if you choose to remain quite shut up in yourself, I suppose that's your business. I'm off to the hunt again. Fresh horses, and another jolly good go at it. Farewell, little brother.
And that was the last I saw of him. He walked out of the door and out of existence. Alfred's fate exactly duplicated my mother's. He was pitched from his horse and killed on the spot by a concussion of the brain. The devil was with us. The way had opened. My premonition of married life with Bertha could be realized. I would dance a wedding jig on my brother's grave. Oh, what sweet dread. What rapture and horror lay ahead.
The part of Latimer was played by Toby Stevens and Latimer as a boy by Edward Michie. Father, Tim Piggott-Smith. Mother, Vivian Heilbronn. Alfred, Simon Scardifield. Bertha, Abigail Doherty. Charles Mernier, Ian Hughes. And Dr. Black, John Rowe. With Rachel Atkins, Tracy Ann Oberman, Hugh Dixon and Christopher Wright. The Lifted Veil by Jonathan Holloway, based on George Eliot's novella, was directed by Jane Morgan.